Rewind is an award-winning insider's look at Wisconsin politics and public policy. Brought to you by Wisconsin Eye and wispolitics.com. To become a program sponsor, please send an email to rewind@wisi.org.
I believe united we stand, and we have common ground to find, and we're going to find it. We're not even going to be
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind. Hey, J.R., did you get your mom and your brothers to subscribe to our podcast yet?
Not yet.
Okay. We're having about 20 people over Sunday, and they won't be able to eat until they subscribe to our podcast. Anyway, Wisi was there. Health Services Secretary Andrea Palm says 20% in the last MU polls support expansion of MA. Governor Evers says he's well aware of the broad veto powers over the legislature's budget. There's emotional testimony, from the River Falls budget hearing. Senator Olson and Representative Allen talk about the dark store bills. Well, they're not the solutions that the governor and local officials want, but they're going to move three bills. And former Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez yesterday on the Madison campus talked about Robert Mueller. Wish I was there.
From the very start, even before the budget was out, it was what is Plan B? And I think what I would say is we haven't talked about Plan A yet. What this budget does is says we want it. Do what the people of the state have said they want to do, right? We went from 62% approval in the Marquette poll to 70% in the most recent one that came out last week. Bring down that federal money from expansion and drive it into the healthcare system.
The veto power is important. Clearly, we have a divided government, and one of my strengths is a veto. And in addition, you know, it could be a veto of certain parts of the budget that Republicans feel very strongly about. But I won't be surrendering that at all.
I ask you to create a buy-in program so that caregivers can get the wages they need and deserve.
Governor Evers has proposed the most fiscally irresponsible budget in Wisconsin history. The governor has proposed $1.3 billion in job-killing taxes on Wisconsin small businesses. He has proposed a massive gas tax increase on Wisconsin families, along with an undemocratic scheme to automatically increase our gas tax year after year.
We pretty well exhausted the subject. Covering it from the local assessor's point of view, from a retailer's point of view, from the commerce point of view, from the municipality's point of view. We had all the players at the table.
It just all of a sudden dawned us that there's some things we need to do to make this system work, and we were able to get good support on both sides. Nobody thought we could come up with anything. So we came up with three pieces of legislation that Scott and I are very proud of.
Parents in states where marijuana is legal and accessible are touting the improvements that they see in their daughters with RET, the same syndrome that my daughter has.
I used to be able to breathe regularly and swallow food. I just want to be able to try the same medicine that my friends are trying. I want to see if it will help me.
It's worse when you're a black boy in special education because they just continue to label you as behavioral. An emotional disorder. When in fact, I worked with a lot of kids in the state of Wisconsin who get that label in the IEP and they can't read. But they're just getting warehoused in special ed, they're getting funneled through the system, end up dropping out or getting caught in the legal system. When I worked in the prison system, the average age of the inmates, I did my study, were 35 to 44. All of them had a third grade level or reading below.
Bob Mueller was my FBI director. I know Bob Mueller very well, and I trust Bob Mueller. And if he says the president tried to do something that he shouldn't have done and that others, fortunately like Don McGahn and others, refused to do it, then I worry about that. The fact that the president was unsuccessful in getting people to do things that they shouldn't do, that doesn't make me very comfortable.
I did not think that our lead topic this week would be Foxconn. Did you?
No.
No?
Not on Monday. How about that?
Oh, okay. I agree with that. But let's set the table by hearing what Governor Evers said about Foxconn and unrealistic that they're going to have 13,000 jobs, so the state should begin looking for a new deal with them. Governor Evers told reporters in his Capitol office this on Foxconn this week.
13,000 people as Foxconn employees is probably difficult to imagine for me right now. That was based on work that is not going to be done now. I mean, whether it's 1,300 or 13,000, that's a lot of folks. But it's unlikely in the near future it's going to be 13,000. The deal that was struck is no longer in play. And so we will be working with individuals at Foxconn, and of course, with WEDC to figure out how a new set of parameters should be negotiated into.
I want to ask you about the timing. Had the governor been sensing that things with Foxconn were not going very well, so he said this week, or was it just our governor, he was asked about Foxconn, and that's what he said?
Well, Foxconn's in the news, because all these reports came in about what might be happening with the chairman. There was
the founder.
First, there was a story that suggested that he was going to step back from day-to-day control of the company.
I think he has.
Well, that's a weird thing. See, the story came out saying, quoting him directly, saying he's going to step back a little bit, and the company had a statement saying, no, they misinterpreted his remarks. But it
And the reason for him potentially stepping back was to run for president of Taiwan.
Found out later. So he says in this interview he's looking at stepping back a little bit. I'm not giving up control or like leaving, but just like, you know, finding, he's training other people to come in. The statement from the company kind of matches what he says, but still says the story he misinterpreted his remarks. Next day, report that he's going to run for president of Taiwan.
Yes.
Company again says they're misinterpreting his remarks. He would only run if, and this is, I don't understand Taiwanese politics, but there's a party process, a primary process, and only if the process is fair and transparent would he think about running. But next he says he's running, period.
Yes.
So that's what put Foxconn in the news. It also goes to what Evers is saying, that they're not sure it's going to be 13,000 people, because Foxconn originally proposed, when they signed this deal, did the groundbreaking, up to 13,000 employees, $10 billion, and producing LCD screens the size of a garage door,
yeah,
roughly, give or take. Now we're talking screens the size...
Generation 5,
six, X. Smaller than this table.
X,
and now this table is still pretty big,
yeah,
right? It's a good big screen TV. But that's a world of difference between what they talked about before and talking about now. So in context of all this, he was just asked about like Foxconn, and he said, in light of what we've seen, 13,000 is unrealistic. And maybe we should look at renegotiating the contract. Now, what does that mean? Remember when this contract was signed and they went through the permitting process, for example, I think the city of Racine was allowed to divert up to 7 million gallons of water a day from Lake Michigan.
Much of which was going to be returned, yes.
5.8 million of that was going to be for Foxconn. Well, if you're building smaller screens, how much water do you need? What should the air permits be for a smaller plant? Those are the things that Evers hasn't quite made clear, like what he might want to renegotiate or look at with this evolving process at the plant. But by saying that, he's also opening the door to criticism from Republicans who've backed this deal, voted for this deal, and still are pushing it to say he's trying to undermine it.
Okay, and let's talk about that right now, because the proposed Foxconn plan is in the district of Assembly Speaker Robin Voss,
mm-hmm,
who told a Milwaukee radio interviewer how naive Governor Evers is to not understand the full ramification of the words he says and the actions he is trying to take. And let's go on. Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald, if the state is willing to renege on its commitment to Foxconn and open up a contract without agreement by both parties, then what guarantee can Wisconsin make to any other company that wants to expand here? So that was the immediate reaction. Mm-hmm. Then we got a statement from Foxconn. Foxconn remains committed to our contract with the state. We are open to further consultation, collaboration, and new ideas. Confusion.
So Foxconn...
Connect the dots,
let's
as our
do Foxconn
says.
Statement first, okay? Every time we've seen a story coming out of Asia, out of the United States, saying that raising doubts about what Foxconn is going to do in Racine County, mm-hmm, the company says it remains committed to its original promise, 13,000 jobs, $10 billion. So that statement really isn't any different we've seen from other reports. What's interesting, you know, I asked people about this week, was that with Evers' comments, he opens a door to being the scapegoat for project backers if and when this thing falls apart. Now, I'm not projecting it will, okay? We don't know what's going to happen. But let's pull back and look globally. This is a company producing a product that has global demand and global forces at play. That's part of why we're seeing, we would be the only producer of an LCD screen this size in the Western Hemisphere, I believe, if this goes forward. It's all done in Asia and other places in the Eastern Hemisphere because costs are higher here. Originally proposed, there was going to be a glass plant on site from another company.
When they were going to go back to build these huge LCD screens.
But the state said, no, we're not going to put more incentives on the table to help that plant get there. Now that's not there, they don't have maybe the synergies to do the things you're talking about. So what's this going to look like in the end? Also, don't forget, this project has become so politically intertwined at this point, right? Walker talked about last fall, if you want to see Foxconn succeed, I have to get reelected, right? Earlier this year, when there was talk about whether it was going to pull back from even the Generation 6 plant, there's a conversation between President Trump and the company about what was going on. The next day, they re-announced the commitment to
a manufacturing
plant.
Now,
I'm not suggesting the president changed their minds or anything like that, but there obviously is a vested interest for President Trump in this plant succeeding because he came in for the groundbreaking.
Well, the Republicans say, look, our agreement was they don't get their almost $3 billion unless they invest $10 billion and 13,000 jobs. So the Republicans say we only give those credits if they invest X amount and if they hire X number.
Yeah.
So there's no real need to renegotiate a deal that, in the words I think of Speaker Voss, is pretty tight.
But is there a need to expand I-94 to 8 lanes for 2,000 employees versus 13,000 employees? What about the roads around the Foxconn plant that are local roads being expanded dramatically for this influx of employees? The infrastructure, the
borrowing by the local governments.
The high voltage transmission line to bring power. I mean, again, I am not an economist. I am not going to predict what this plant's going to look like in 10 years.
None of us can predict what it's going to look like in 2 years.
But I'm trying to get the questions being raised because of the revision of what this is going to be. Now, if you're Evers, you're in a difficult position, right? Because you ran as a critic of Foxconn. And there is a definite contingent of the Democratic Party that is not a fan of this deal. This is a bad one for the state. They gave way too much. You have Republicans who backed it who are saying this is going to work, that we put this ironclad agreement in place. So if Evers, what do you do? Do you advocate for that plant of the hope that it succeeds? Because if it succeeds, that's 13,000 jobs in Wisconsin?
Oh, yeah. And even the governor said, even if it's 1,300 jobs, it's still a net economic gain for the state.
So how do you approach that, knowing that in your party there are people who don't like this at all? And now, don't forget, too, the polling that we've seen. Outstate is not as popular as it is in southeastern Wisconsin. Do I get the impression that Evers would lose support in Milwaukee, for example, because he's not a fan of Foxconn?
No.
Does it hurt him outstate? You know, probably not. But backers of the deal, they are going to, you know, go after him about this. So how's he, how do they move forward on this plant to try and make it work? And don't forget the 13,000 jobs. Even if you get to 13,000, what will those jobs be? It was envisioned as a manufacturing facility. They've talked about research and development, engineering, packaging.
And those jobs have to pay X amount to qualify for the state credits.
Don't forget, Foxconn missed the number of jobs required to produce in the first year for the credits.
So they didn't get.
There are all kinds of questions about this. And I guess what I'm trying to get at is, like, there are so many questions about this plant. It's everything we're going to see a possible change. There's going to be, what's going on now?
Right. And journalists like you and I never know on what front the Foxconn news is going to break next. So I really don't know where the ball is now.
Don't forget, the first screen was rolled off the assembly line when? The fourth quarter of 2020? What's in the fourth quarter of 2020?
Might be an election.
One prediction I will make is watch closely what happens if President Trump's reelected or not. If he's not, what happens to Foxconn? Because there's a theory I heard that there's a big relationship thing with this company and the people. It's like with Walker. With Trump, there's a relationship thing there. If Trump is not there, what's the incentive for Foxconn to keep investing in Wisconsin? I'm not, again, not predicting, but watch that dynamic.
Okay, but we got to move on. Okay, the state Supreme Court, now on May 15th, will hear the lame duck, the challenges to the legislation and appointments that were made during the lame duck session in December. The court took jurisdiction. I read the Court of Appeals decision, District 3, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It says, this is an issue of first impression. Ergo, it belongs before the state Supreme Court. The court has issued deadlines for the filing of briefs. One Dane County judge struck down all lame duck changes, and a second judge threw out some. The appeals court let rulings by Dane County judges stand. Any PS as we get ready for this May 15th oral argument?
We almost need a spreadsheet at this point to keep track of what's going on with this case, because remember, there are two cases out of Dane County. This is just one of them. The second one, we're still pending out there what's going on. With this one, the Supreme Court's been asked not just to take up the case directly, which it did bypass on Monday. It's been asked by Republican lawmakers to immediately restore these appointments that Evers rescinded, then didn't restore, because they were Walker appointees. The Senate confirmed in December. The Dane County judge in the one case says all actions in December are null and void, ergo those appointments are out. So now we have, they're going to take the case, but they haven't acted on their request to restore these guys immediately.
Right.
Republicans offered, I think, three paths, you know, three options to put those back in place immediately. And in fact, the one brief I read, they wanted them in place as of last Friday, mm-hmm. Or an order by last Friday to have them all back on the job on Monday.
And the Supreme Court refused to do that. But I want to focus on how important this case is, because the issue here is are actions approved in extraordinary sessions mm-hmm. dating back to 1981 valid? It's a huge issue. As the Court of Appeals said, it is an issue of first impression.
Yeah. It's, again, you almost need a spreadsheet to understand what's going on and why with this thing anymore.
Okay. Let's go back. I'm sorry. Next subject. Let's talk about the deal on the rape kits, the huge mm-hmm. issue in the leading up to the last election for attorney general. The announcement last week by Republicans and Democrats, I want to walk through these provisions because for the first time we would have statewide standards. I'll just do them quickly. After healthcare professional collects sexual assault evidence, victim chooses whether to report to law enforcement. If victim chooses not to report, kit must be sent to the state crime lab within 72 hours. Crime lab must store kit for up to 10 years or until the victim decides to report. Two more points. If victim chooses to report, healthcare professional will notify law enforcement within 24 hours after collecting the kit. Finally, law enforcement agency has 72 hours to collect the kit from healthcare professional, then 14 days to send kit to state crime lab. So we would first have statewide rules governing the collection of these rape kits. Mm-hmm. And a very emotional issue. We saw the backlog play a role in the election of Attorney General Josh Call. So I think the fact that you had Representative Stephan, who we'll hear from in a minute, and Sargent and Taylor and other Democrats, I think this is a pretty big deal. I think it's one area where we do have bipartisan cooperation. Agree?
Well, they're looking to be proactive, all right? So let's go back. I mean, and the rape kit thing, bedeviled Pei Lautenschlager, you know, years ago. J.B. Van Hollen addressed it. Brad Schimmel was criticized because the perception that he wasn't as active on as he could have been the first couple of years of his term.
He moved very late.
It started happening, but as he was gearing for reelection, Josh Call is trying to be proactive on this issue and get something out ahead of it. Don't forget, in the budget, he's requested additional forensic
technician,
scientists.
Analysts.
So those to bulk up the crime lab.
Right.
Governor Evers, so Governor Evers proposed more, but not as much as what Call wanted. Now
yeah.
Call's got to go to lawmakers and ask them. Been doing tours of the crime labs with Governor Evers as well as lawmakers to try and bolster his request. This is about, again, being proactive on an issue that he knows if he falls behind on that caseload, it'll be an issue again in 2022.
Right, and this is the time to hear from Republican Representative Stephan and Democratic Representative Sargent on the significance of this compromise that they announced this week. Please.
Backlogs and bureaucracy should never be a barrier to justice. And sadly, that has been a situation as it relates to our sexual assault rape kits. This legislation provides some clear, concise, efficient, and agreed upon procedures for ensuring that those kits are delivered to the state crime lab in a way that can ensure that justice can be delivered.
Not only does this legislation work to create and codify a procedure that will honor our survivors and to ensure their ability to have sexual assault kits collected, processed, and stored in appropriate timeframes, but it protects those who do not choose to report at the time of an assault. Reporting can be one of the most challenging steps that survivors take, and they deserve to have the respect to report and be ready to have their stored kit there when they are ready to report. The time frame specified in this legislation will take into account the traumatic nature of these crimes.
After we taped last week's Rewind, the U.S. Attorney, Scott Blader, announced that a four-year investigation of Lincoln Hills would be ending without any charges. The federal investigators looked at abuse of juvenile prison inmates by staff. The four-year probe ended with a finding of, quote, insufficient evidence to prove federal criminal civil rights charges. And Governor Evers says, okay, it's up to Josh Call to begin a state investigation. And you and I know that Josh Call announced we're not going to open a state investigation into misconduct by staffers at Lincoln Hills. And it was interesting. Scott Blader said, proving willfulness, is a heavy burden under federal law. Prosecutors must not only prove that the force used was excessive, but must also prove that the staff member acted with a deliberate and specific intent to do something the law forbids. You and I have looked and read about some of the tragic incidents at Lincoln Hills, but no charges, no foul thoughts?
Yes, we made clear the burden was very high to reach that. Don't forget with Josh Call and a statement about not opening a state investigation came out before the latest monitor's report, because there's a federal lawsuit, there's a settlement to try and improve conditions at the youth prison,
yep.
Required them to meet certain standards.
Yep.
That latest monitor report shows they're making progress on some, not so much on others. Just something to watch if there are continued failures with them to meet the requirements, what happens, whether that changes Call's mind or brings some kind of penalty from federal court. It also gets at the process to close Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake and move these regional facilities and the new type 1, we call them, state facilities for most serious offenders.
Right.
The question I've gotten from people is like, look, these problems are going to persist until we get either more staff up there or get them the heck out of that facility.
Yes.
So with Governor Evers, why do you want to take off a deadline to move out? He said they need more time. He wants no deadline. Republicans and Democrats and legislators are worried that you'll only give like 6 more months because right now the date is January 1, 2021, I believe.
I think so.
So you get, they're proposing a bill to have 6 more months. Again, that's, they passed the bill last spring to close it. Even 2021 or 2022, whatever it is, that's 3-4 years, you know, that you're talking about to get closed. People say, just get it done.
Yeah.
Get out of there, move on, because you won't take care of this problem until you get there. And by Governor Evers, if more problems persist, you start to own them because you are governor.
Right. And so now it's time from here to hear from Governor Evers when he said, okay, I accept the fact that the federal probe is over. Let's move forward. Let's start talking about and deciding 2 potential state facilities, 3 potential county-run facilities for juveniles. And let's hear from the governor, please.
From my own vantage point, we need to move beyond that. The previous administration and the legislature made the political effort to close that prison and to create new opportunities closer to home for those kids. And so that's where our focus has to be. I mean, right now we're fighting over whether it's 2 or 3 and where those places should be. The sooner that we resolve that, the better. We have a mission. We have to accomplish it, and that's where my goal is going to be.
Last week on the executive committee of the State Republican Party named Andrew Hitt, the new party chairman. Mm-hmm. He's taking over for Brad Courtney, who had been chairman for 8 years. He was a pretty low-profile chairman, but Mr. Hitt is senior counsel of Michael Best and Friedrich, CEO of Michael Best Strategies. He is a former deputy legal counsel to the governor, and you said he was a member of the governor's judicial advisory committee?
I believe so, yeah, or at least part of the process, screening process for judicial candidates.
Right.
Look, here's the thing. The Republican Party did this process of this postmortem after what happened last fall, right? The early indications are that the grassroots of the Republican Party felt either neglected or taken for granted, you know, kind of pick your term, like they just weren't enthusiastic last year. The challenge of the party is, okay, how do you address that? Look, it's not like the Republican Party forgot how to turn people out last fall after the wins that they had. I've often made the observation that, you know, people talk about turnout, what a big deal it is, and parties kind of brag about how many people they have in the field or whatever. To me, turnout operations take advantage of the environment. They don't create the environment. So if you have Republicans who don't want to turn out, you can't make them go. Same with Democrats. I mean, it's not like Democrats forgot how Barack Obama won in 08 in Wisconsin 2 years later. The environment was different. That said, part of the party's challenge is going to be getting those grassroots energized again and geared up, because you have next fall this big presidential race. And oh, by the way, the Democrats will elect their new chair, the June convention.
Yes.
Right now we have two candidates announced.
I was going to ask you.
Ben Wickler, senior advisor, MoveOn.org. David Bowen, the current vice chair of the party, first vice chair.
Thank you.
Who ran with Martha Lanning as a ticket last two terms. Martha's not seeking re-election. I haven't heard of anybody else making calls to run, but it's those two right now. Be interesting to watch how that plays out. But one of those two gentlemen, barring a surprise candidate, will be in charge of leading the party from the wins in 18, the setback in the spring of 19, mm-hmm. to what can you do in 20.
Right, and Chairman Hitt will be presiding over his first state convention, May 17th and the 18th. Interesting comment from former state and national party chairman and White House chief of staff, Reince Priebus. Our state could very well decide the next presidential election. Andrew will bring a fresh perspective to the party while ensuring we stay true to our mission of being a grassroots-driven organization. So the Republicans go first in May, and then I think on June 8th, the Democrats?
June 1st and 2nd, I think it is.
Oh, okay.
Well, the first week is in June. Yes.
Okay. Now, no stock report because the Easter Bunny
taking a break
hid it from you or something. But quickly, let's talk about. I went to five websites today of our GOP congressional delegation. Found no immediate response to the Mueller report. But you've heard from some of these people.
We got statements from most of the delegation, plus the U.S. senators and Democrats as well. I mean, you know, it's kind of what you'd expect. Republicans are claiming victory for the president. Democrats want to see more. That's not a big shock. The thing that was interesting is I did not read the entire report yesterday, but I did use a control F function and found one mention of Wisconsin. There was a mention of one paragraph of Paul Manafort, the campaign chair, speaking with a guy who had ties to Russian intelligence.
Yes.
About the battleground states. We were one of them.
Yes.
About a third of that graph was redacted. So, but talked about us there. Reince Priebus, we just mentioned, made a lot of appearances in that report.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, again, if you get control F, his name comes up 200 times, you know, a bunch of those are just the citations from his interview. But he describes a chaotic White House. I mean, he was chief of staff the first 6-7 months for the president. He used some terms I can't use on Wisconsin Eye about what the president was asking people to do.
Right.
Talked about, I'll give you one example, though. Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, had offered his resignation letter to the president. The president accepted the resignation but kept the letter. And Priebus and others were worried that that was like something to hang over DOJ, and expressed to people that that was like a shock collar for the agency, and that like having DOJ by the throat. They were just, yeah, if you
it was also interesting. At one point, Mr. Priebus advised the president,
whatever
don't
do,
talk about Russia. Whatever, don't talk about
Russia.
I think
that was for the Comey meeting, yeah. So there's a lot, I mean, just a lot of Priebus, because he was in the thick of what was going on the first 6 months of that presidency. So,
right.
And he spoke with the investigators, you know, so they have lots of citations from Reince Priebus.
Yeah, okay. Let's look ahead quickly at next week. The last state budget hearing, I think, is Wednesday mm-hmm. in Green Bay. Anything else coming up next week that you'll be looking for?
A breather?
A slow time. Fair enough.
Watch for the Supreme Court. We still got to see, are they going to issue any kind of order about restoring those appointments, because they still have at least one avenue on the table to issue a ruling that they're back.
They've
on
the given gym. Deadlines for briefs to be filed. Isn't that next week?
So they still have that piece, that bigger piece hanging up, but there's still that option. Could they possibly store those appointments?
Yeah.
That's something to watch. We got a lot of 5 o'clock releases from the Supreme Court this week about what was going on.
Right.
So something to keep an eye on.
You're going
to
keep compiling numbers on fundraising for a congressional delegation, but we don't have time for that today.
Yes.
Anyway, okay, watch for Westside coverage of Wednesday's joint finance budget hearing in Green Bay. And I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for April 19th.